This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Why do some of us like haunted houses and fright flicks while others avoid them at all cost? Later on the show, we'll talk to a psychiatrist who studies the science of fear. Speaking of haunted places and ghost stories, my first guest is Kat Kloko. The former Cincinnati resident is a co-host of the Paranormal View radio show, which airs on the ParaX radio network. Her latest venture into the world of ghosts is her new book, Ohio's Haunted Crimes, an exploration of 10 haunted crime scenes. It includes stories about the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield and Ryan's Tavern in Little Chicago and Hamilton. And she joins us this afternoon to tell us more about Ohio's haunted crime scenes and her fascination with the paranormal. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kat, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Mark. Hello, Cincinnati, and happy Halloween. Thank you for having me on the show.
Happy Halloween to you too, Kat. Kat, what inspired you to write the book?
I love just true crime and stories and crime noir. I grew up on it when I was younger, and I also love history and find that using ghosts to share history is a wonderful way of spreading true stories of what happened with a little bit of entertainment with the ghosts. So I wrote Ohio's Haunted Crime, merging my love of the paranormal and my love for true crime.
So using ghost stories to convey history, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I know as a young child, I didn't read a whole lot until I had my own personal experience with a ghost. And then I started looking for true crime. That's a little bit early for someone who was nine at the time, but true haunted locations. And I started collecting books. And my first series was Haunted Ohio by Chris Woodyard. And it's a series. And I found it fascinating and learned so much about Ohio and around Cuyahoga County. And because I think that's where Chris is actually writing out of. So now I have over 400 books in my personal library of haunted locations from around the world.
400 books. That's quite a collection, Kat.
Yes.
Now,
yes, it's quite heavy.
How many years did it take you to get that many?
Oh, I'm going over 20 years now of collecting books. Yeah.
Now, in your book, you're talking about haunted crime scenes. So I'm wondering,
yes,
you know, why did you focus on crime scenes in Ohio, not just haunted sites in general? Because we've got a lot of those in the state.
Yeah, we do. And we have plenty of books that have highlighted just the general hauntings. And they're fantastic books. And I own quite a few of them myself. But crime scenes seem to be something that people are interested in, but not a lot of talk has happened until recently about them. And I really got the idea to write the book when I visited the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. It's better known as Mansfield Reformatory. And it has been highlighted on various paranormal reality TV shows. And it's a fantastic building. If you are a fan of just history, if you're a fan of true crime, if you're a fan of movie memorabilia, Mansfield Reformatory is a fantastic place to go because it's also the place where they filmed The Shawshank Redemption. So it serves as just one location, but multiple different genre interest groups. Just fantastic, I think.
So is that Ohio's most famous haunted place, the Mansfield Reformatory?
Without a doubt, yes. Yes, it is. And I think it's also one of the most haunted locations in the entire state.
What were your experience? Now, you went to all these places, right, in the book? You went to all 10 or?
Yes.
Okay.
Fair One Cemetery. I went to every single location.
What was the experience like at the Mansfield Reformatory? What kinds of things happened there?
Oh, lots of spooky things. So originally I went there in 2011 with a paranormal team, and I didn't know what to expect. It was new to me, although it had been featured on different shows and books. I had tried to keep my exposure to it to a minimum, because I like to just learn things. It's more exciting as you learn things as you're going through these locations. So you walk in, and it's this beautiful neo-Gothic building built in 1896, and the architecture is fantastic for the warden's quarters, although it's not falling apart, but paint is peeling, and it could use some TLC. And then you go into the cell blocks, and those are enormous. Each cell block has 600 cells. It's the largest freestanding cell block in the world to this date, and you feel so small looking up at this cell block that held 1,200 or more men. And the Western cell block is not quite as big as East cell block, but it's still gigantic. And you realize what we have done as citizens of Ohio, bringing in these people who the purpose of the reformatory was to reform them, not to discipline them as the penitentiary did, but just what went on there. Disease ran through rampantly. Tuberculosis ravaged through the group there, and 215 people ultimately died on the premises just from illness alone. So experiencing things there, shadow people are continuously, almost daily reported at the location, getting the feeling of being touched, having your hair pulled, just cold spots, which is common in a lot of haunted locations, hearing people screaming. You can look up at the cell blocks and see the ghostly arms of men outreached trying to grab you. People have seen apparitions up in the tuberculosis ward, as well as ghosts in the warden's quarters. And right now, one of the locations that seems to have a lot of activity, and it's fairly new, is known as the Jesus Room, which is a small Catholic chapel that they would hold, mass every Wednesday there, and only extremely good inmates were allowed to go to it. And recently, according to Scott, who runs the ghost hunt tours, they've been getting a lot of disembodied voices, cold spots, and EVP, which is electronic voice phenomena, being recorded on devices of who they believe are the former inmates.
Ooh, you're giving me chills just talking about this.
Yeah.
Now, you have the old Ohio State Penitentiary in Columbus. That's mm-hmm. also on your list. So
yes.
What makes this so haunted? Is it similar to the reformatory?
It is similar to the reformatory, and there are a few notable differences. So the old Ohio Penitentiary no longer stands. It's now the hockey arena in the arena district. But it has seen over 700 people die on that property. So the next time you're going to a hockey game up in Columbus, you just remember you're standing on where a fire in 1930 ravaged through three cell blocks and killed 315 men. They burned to death in their cell blocks. And it's also where we had old Sparky, which was the electric chair, and that killed another 300 or so people. And that, they like to say, was right on center ice, but actually it was more like where there's a parking garage across the street from the arena, and that's actually where old Sparky used to be. And people have experienced shadow people. The most common is actually smelling of burning wood because of the fire that happened there. And also just hearing screams and hearing the sounds of chains clatter. Now, when I was doing the research, I did speak to some early urban explorers who got to tour. I don't know how exactly they did this. The old penitentiary before it was raised in 1998, and they said it was very spooky, and they felt being watched, like they were being watched the entire time. They smelled the burning wood and timbers from the fire, and they could hear the phantom screams of people sitting on old Sparky, basically.
And all this is still going on, even though the penitentiary no longer exists.
Exactly. And that brings up an interesting point. And I'm glad you have the psychologist talk about fear later on, because it's something very interesting when you're studying this is why people are choosing to remember these incidents the way they, the ghosts seem to be presenting themselves. This is my second book, and I'm an anthropologist by training. So why people are seeing ghosts and how they are seeing ghosts is very interesting to me. And I find ghost stories and urban legends are a way of people to remember traumatic events so that we try not to repeat them. And as one of my friends says, ghosts are just basically history screaming back to us, saying, don't repeat what mistakes we've made. Just keep going, become better people, and just remember us for these incidents.
Kat,
so I think that, yes.
Go ahead and finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It was just, I think that's why the ghosts continue to haunt the old prison area.
How did you go about picking what you consider to be the 10 most haunted crime scenes? How did you make that selection?
Let's see. Well, I knew that Mansfield was one that I really wanted to do. So they were one of the first groups I contacted.
And Mansfield had national recognition, too.
They also have national recognition. And they're very open to talking about the ghosts that they have there. It's interesting. There was multiple locations that I approached asking them to share their history with me. Some declined because they don't want that type of association with the paranormal, which is understandable. Most of these places are places that are very, like Ryan's Tavern in Hamilton, are very proud of their ghosts. Riders Inn in Painesville, Ohio, has the spirit of Suzanne, who's a former innkeeper who's been haunting the location since 1832, and they're very proud of Suzanne. So all these locations were the ones that were saying, yes, come share our history. It's very interesting. People are very strange, and through the centuries, people do very odd things, and or in some cases, very great things that are memorable. Also, the ability for people to visit, I was very cognizant of, will my readers be able to go to these locations? And most of them, yes, you can. The best one that I found, and this was a suggestion to me, was Old Licking County Jail in Newark, Ohio. That was actually a reader suggestion. I did not know this jail was open for investigations and to visit, and a reader just submitted it to me via email one day and said, hey, go check this out. So that's also how I chose locations.
We will continue our haunted conversation with Kat Klocko, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon, Kat Klocko. Her new book is Ohio's Haunted Crimes, an exploration of 10 haunted crime scenes. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kat, you start the book with a local story about Imogene Remus. And this one's interesting because it involves Eden Park, a lawyer who turned into a bootlegger, and a lady in black. You got to tell me about this one.
Oh, this was fantastic. So I moved to Cincinnati from Indiana a number of years ago, and this was the first ghost story told to me when I moved, and it intrigued me so much. So when I had the opportunity to write the book, besides Mansfield Reformatory, Imogene Remus was somebody that I wanted to write about and bring her story to light. And as you said, it's fantastic. So it starts actually in Chicago back in the early 1900s. And the Remus family were a family of immigrants. And George Remus became a very popular lawyer for, let's say, as a mob defender. And he was a very flamboyant lawyer, much like, I believe it's the character Billy Flynn from the musical Chicago. He was very outspoken when he was in the courtroom and defending people and very theatrical, and he was a very theatrical man. And although he was already married to a woman named Lillian, he ended up becoming infatuated with a woman named Imogene, who worked at the local deli in his neighborhood. And eventually she became the secretary at his law office in Chicago. And eventually they took it further, and it became a romantic affair. Now, George Remus divorced his first wife, Lillian, and Imogene divorced her first husband, and the two married in Newport in 1920 after they moved down the ship to Cincinnati. Now, again, George Remus with Imogene, they established a new law office, and he was defending a lot of the, not quite bootleggers yet, but a lot of the men who were making a lot of money making and distilling whiskey. When Prohibition happened, he realized very quickly, and he was a very bright man, that his clients were making a mint, basically, just hundreds of millions of dollars from selling bootleg whiskey. So he actually had a pharmaceutical license from Chicago, because before he was a lawyer, he and his family owned pharmacies, and he sold them but kept his license. So what he did was he studied the Volstoid Act, which was the Prohibition Act that made alcohol illegal. He found loopholes, and one of the loopholes he found was if he used his pharmacy license, he can make medicinal whiskey at his distillery in Kentucky and sell it to himself at his own pharmacy in Cincinnati. And that's what he did. And he made millions of dollars. And he built this huge mansion and had lavish parties. In the New Year's party of 1922, he gave every single man who came to his party a brand new Model T, and every single woman got a new watch. And it's just mind-blowing just how wealthy they became basically overnight. And he paid off government officials.
So this guy's a scoundrel.
He was a scoundrel, but he was brilliant about it. I'm going to be very honest. Up until one day, he got caught, and he was sent down to the federal prison in Atlanta. And that's when he found and became friends with Franklin Dodge. Now, Franklin Dodge was actually there to undercover for the basically the FBI before the FBI became an department. And he was actually investigating the superintendent of the Atlanta Federal Prison, Albert Starton. But when he became friends with George Remus, he realized that not only did Remus have millions of dollars, but Imogene, Remus's wife, now had the power of attorney over everything in his stead while George was incarcerated for 2 years. So immediately, Franklin Dodge recused himself of his investigation and headed up to Cincinnati. And his purpose was to originally try to dismantle the Remus whiskey empire. But he and Imogene ended up becoming romantically involved. And she, with the help of Dodge, started dismantling everything. They sold off all of his whiskey distilleries, all of his pharmacies, and were planning to escape and get married elsewhere. She had filed papers for divorce from George while he was still in Atlanta. In 1927, George Remus was released, and he immediately hightailed it back up to Cincinnati.
And he's not happy.
His entire empire is falling apart. And so he goes after her. She, Imogene, and Franklin Dodge hide out actually in Walnut Hills in a hotel there. Up until October of 1927, October 27th to be correct, when Imogene and George have to appear at the Cincinnati courthouse, the Hamilton County courthouse, to finalize their divorce. So Imogene's coming in from Walnut Hills, and George Remus is coming in from a location that's never really been released. But they're both driving through and around Eaton Park at the time. Well, George Remus in his chauffeured car notices Imogene and Franklin Dodge and Imogene's daughter in a taxi. And I'm going to say, low-speed chase ensues. He goes to his chauffeur and says, follow that car. I want that woman that's in that car. And then there is just a low-speed car chase through Cincinnati and Walnut Hills. And it ends at the gazebo at Eden Park because the two cars kind of collided. And Imogene got out of the car. Remus got out of his car. And he shot her point blank in the stomach in front of the gazebo in Eden Park. Now, she survived the initial shot but died during surgery 2 hours later. And ever since then, people have seen, around this time, a woman in black in 1920s attire standing at the gazebo. And the people who witness her are people who are just joggers, people walking their dogs, people that drive through and around to get around the park, and also people have seen her around the lake. And when she is approached, however, the woman disappears. So she makes it very difficult to actually investigate to see if there is a ghost there. Now, in the paranormal world, we call this a residual haunting. She really isn't there. That's not the spirit of Imogene Remus, but it's some type of memory imprinted onto the location that seems to come up every late October and early November, and people encounter it.
Oh,
so yet again,
that's interesting.
It may be history trying to remind us of what happened. Yeah.
Let's talk to Lee in Cincinnati. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go right ahead.
Hi, Kat. This is Lee with Fair Visions. How are you?
Oh, hey, Lee. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, I was just on listening to NPR, and I was like, hey, Kat's on there. I needed to call and say hey and just give her some perks.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we work together in the paranormal field, and we do a lot of events, and we've done some investigations together in the past, and I just thought I would get on here and say hey to you, and keep up the good work, girl, and the books are great, and all that good stuff. This is our time of the year right now. It's Halloween.
Lee, oh, yeah, it is.
And Lee, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Now, Kat, you were a Cincinnati resident. You've moved to Rhode Island now, right?
Yeah, it's just a temporary move. I'll be back in Cincinnati shortly.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. How does Rhode Island stack up as far as being someplace with haunted sites?
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's a different type of haunting, I will say that. Rhode Island had something that happened called the Great Swamp War, which was a war between the Wampanoag Native Americans and the settlers from the early times of colonial America. So dotted throughout the state, you'll see markers of, much like if you go to Gettysburg, they have markers for every infantry unit that has fought in a location. You'll have a similar monument to the Native Americans and the settlers and a description of what happened. Also, I love the ghost stories and the local lore. My new favorite little creature is called a puckwudgie, and it's a goblin-like character that has little spines like a porcupine. And whenever something a little bit odd happens around your house, let's say dishes shift in the dish dryer, or you lose your keys, or your favorite hair comb goes missing, you can blame a puckwudgie.
Puckwudgie, is that what I'm hearing?
A puckwudgie.
A puckwudgie,
yes.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. So what? We got about a minute left here. What's the message you'd like people to take away from your book?
Just that ghosts are a way of remembering victims, and by creating ghost stories, it's a very odd way of almost memorializing, making a memorial for those who have passed. So we never forget their stories. They become immortal through these ghost stories.
Do you have plans for a follow-up book?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm probably going to write Indiana's Haunted Crimes next.
Okay. Yeah, because you're originally from Indiana, right?
Yes, I am. And there are plenty of very interesting crime scenes in Indiana as well. Thank you mob times during the Prohibition. You have made the Midwest incredibly haunted.
Well, Kat, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show, and happy Halloween, everyone.
Same to you, Kat. Kat Kloko, she's co-host of the Paranormal View radio show, which airs on the Para-X radio network. Her new book is Ohio's Haunted Crimes, an exploration of 10 haunted crime scenes. Coming up, the science of fear, why some of us enjoy a good scare. And in focus on technology, how Dubai plans to become the 3D printing capital of the world. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.